to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. Kevin, what are the dog days of summer? Because I'm pretty sure we're in them.
Yeah, it's August. There's something about August that kind of has that dog days effect. You can talk about the dog days of the baseball season, which is right in the middle of this month. Then there's the dog days of fall camp, both really from a pro and a college point of view, really. And just because, you know, even though the pros have got games, preseason games, that it's still like there's something about the month of August in football where the 1st of August arrives and everyone's excited because on the last day of the month, at least from high school, is that games are going to be played. And obviously for Baylor, it's going to be the first game is going to be September 1st. But when you get into this week, it's kind of like the same old, same old, same old business. And it's really kind of hard to get people excited, to keep them motivated, that sort of thing, because the newness of fall camp and the energy has kind of been wiped away, and the season opener is still too far out there. So this is the week where everyone's going, ah, geez. Now, next week, I kind of expect that to change a little bit from a energy standpoint. So it's going to – it just kind of requires everyone to just kind of hang in there. And it didn't sound like Matt Rhule was real fired up today either.
No, he wasn't. He was kind of late back from we were scheduled to do the pressure at 2 o'clock, and he finally came out at like 2:35, and he'd been having a team meeting. And I don't know if you remember back to high school days, but 35-minute team meetings generally weren't a good thing when I was in.
I don't think that's really changed much, and so, there's probably a point that didn't sound like today, based on the things that we discussed earlier before we recorded this podcast, that it didn't sound like today's practice was all that great, if you just go by the tenor and the tone of what Matt was talking about on Wednesday afternoon. It was kind of like, we got a long way to go here. We got things to do there. Some guys are not ready, all that kind of stuff. And I get all that. But I think what you have to just realize, of course, that you just kind of have to just hang in there for a while and just kind of get through this. This is the kind of month that – this is the kind of what's the best way to say this? This is the kind of week where you kind of have to just find it within yourselves to keep going, and if you have a bad play or bad period, that you just got to put it behind you and move on. And so, and that's where I mean, but that's what everyone. This is, no one ever said this was going to be easy playing football or any kind of sport. If it was that easy, then everyone would do it. So you've got to be willing and dedicated. It's the stuff off the field, or the stuff I should say, what you see on the field. On 12 Saturdays a year, is a combination of what's been done for basically the other 343 days, because it's a 365 day sport that is basically rising and falling on what happens on 12 days. And so, and look, out of 343 days, whether they are going to be under a coach's eye or if it's going to be the unsupervised workouts and things like that. There's just going to be days when you practice really well or you do things really, really well. And there's going to be days where you just don't have the energy and you stink. Look, it's the same thing like working out for you and me or whatever. We can get into a gym and have great energy and feel like we just killed it out there on whatever machines we were doing one day, and then come back in the next day and just not have it. It's just life, and you just got to get through it. And so I kind of think that's where today and this week is at right now for Baylor. Not a surprise, but it's just something you just got to deal with.
Well, and the interview's up on our site, but I was kind of ticking through. We asked about the single-digit jerseys. Iconoclast didn't like my single-digit jersey question, but –
but actually, he gave you a pass on that.
So. Anyway, he said they're not ready for single digit jerseys yet. I asked him about Giancarlo Valentin. He's not ready. Asked about the quarterbacks. They got a long way to go. Asked about the I didn't ask, but somebody else asked about the defensive pass rush, and he's like, yeah, we're sending wide receivers over there. We're sending over there. You know, we're sending anybody over there that we think can get a rush. Mm-hmm. Now, he did say that the interior passing guy, that the interior rushing guys were doing a good job, and that he was satisfied with the improvement. But I think also that it affects coaches, because I know that some days when I'm teaching firefighters, even with a good class, with a good group of guys, some days you have a bad, you know, they're out there bad. And like for, you know, for me as the, you know, coach or chief training officer, you know, it really affects me emotionally. If my guys are out there and they're not performing, I am not a happy camper.
No, it's true. You know, and this goes back to the comment of the team meeting. I'm going to look, because I got the copy of the transcript in front of me on the team meeting. So this is basically what Matt Rule said, and I'm going to quote this verbatim. He goes, "I do a team meeting every day. I don't know if they learn anything from it, but it makes me feel good. Every day we try to take on a different subject. It could be something off the field. It could be something on the field. It could be something from practice. It could be something from today. We try to take as many different things as we can and teach off of it. We have different speakers come in. Anytime you get in front of the team, you hope that one guy hears one thing. If you say 10 things, you hope one guy hears one thing that will help him. So hopefully they heard something today." I would hope that somebody did after 35 minutes or something like that. And so, but I'm sure of today, it's just about getting the message and getting everyone on board. Look, we've talked about endlessly where the culture of a program is so important. And that's still part of a work in progress with what Matt's trying to do here. Look, again, he took over a program that was in utter chaos in December of 2016. And where it was, even though that team went to a bowl, but again, it was coming off the crisis of the sexual assault scandal. Then you turn over the roster, you turn over the philosophy, you turn over the coaching staff, of course. And so for people to expect the culture of a program to just snap, you know, snap your fingers and it automatically becomes a thing overnight. It doesn't. It is a 365-day process. And sure, it helps when you go on social media and you see all the happy, you know, the smiles, the jamming by the recruits in the locker room and that sort of thing. You know, when they're about to commit, or just team or photos or whatever. And of course, whatever clips you get during the practices or whatever, that's the stuff. But when you're not there, like we aren't, when we're not there, you know, that's where the heavy lifting is, and that's where everyone, that's when the smiles go away, the work goes in. It's really, and that's why what you have to see is where this is going. And again, I think it's getting there with Baylor's culture. I think there are a lot of guys who are buying into this and that sort of thing. But I think we're going to have to really find that out as we continue through the season. And again, that kind of goes back to the attrition thing, where, look, those six guys leaving doesn't negatively impact where Baylor is with the culture of the program. There are some guys that just weed themselves out, as we saw. But for most part, that's something that's always a work in progress. It's never established. It's every year is different. And that's what makes the challenge of being a head football coach or a coach in a sport so challenging. And you've heard me say this, and our subscribers have heard me say this too, when it's right in the locker room, there's a pretty good chance it's going to be right on the field. And so I think those are things that Matt Rule understands, because he played the game, of course, as a linebacker at Penn State, and things that he appreciates that just takes some time to happen here. So if today was not a great day, as we kind of suspected based on what we heard and how we heard it and that sort of thing, don't take it as a crisis. Just say, look, it just happens. You got to keep going.
One of the things that was pretty definitive, we've kind of hammered around at this previously, that and I had mm-hmm. joked that, you know, a Matt Rule depth chart is like, you know, the code of the pirate, you know, there's more suggestions, really. And, right. And he didn't say exactly that, but when they asked him about, one of the guys asked him about the depth chart, and he said, well, that he's not really a big fan of depth charts, that, you know, he goes out and he looks, and he said, the fact you played last year doesn't mean you're going to play this year. He said that, It depends on who's performing. And he said, we'll probably, I said, when do you think you'll have your starting lineup for the first game set? And he was kind of like, well, probably Sunday before, you know, the Sunday of game week. You know, the Sunday starting game week, it was when they do it. He said that we're going to finish that last week practice. And I think that's one of the things that Rule does to keep the players going is that, man, he'll flip that on a depth chart in a second.
Yeah, I mean, I think depth charts, as far as Matt Rule is concerned, are, I would call them really good ideas. And that's about it. Now, obviously, you can kind of tell you – the starters are the one thing. I mean, that's pretty much going to be ironclad unless somebody gets hurt, and then you got to look at that. But when it comes to the two deep, it's like, oh, okay. Because, look, you're going to have Charlie Brewer as your starting quarterback. I don't care what anyone says. If he's not the starting quarterback, we got a problem with this team, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But, you know, then you have a pretty good idea who your running backs are going to be. And to be honest with you, I don't really care if your starting backfield is going to be Jamichael Hasty and John Lovett, or if it's going to be John Lovett and Trustin Ebner. I really don't care, because everybody, the way running backs are used in today's game, everyone's going to probably see enough touches to, or unless somebody gets hot. Same thing with wide receivers. You pretty much know that Denzel Mims, Jalen Hurd, and probably Chris Platt are going to be your three guys out there on the wide side. You know, and then Jamie Jacobs is going to be your tight end from all accounts of everything. So, I mean, you kind of have a good idea. What it really comes down to is, you know, what does your second team look like? And I think that's really where this is going to come down to. And to the point about Giancarlo Valentin, the JUCO offensive lineman from New York that came in June, when, you know, Matt was talking about today that he's got a ways to go. He's not ready. This is a big week for him. That sort of thing. Makes total sense. I mean, look, he's been here for 2 months. He really has spent, what, less than 2 weeks getting to know this program on a day-in-and-day-out work. I mean, he's gone through the team function stuff for the first 2 months since he got here. But really, these first 2 weeks are really an adjustment for him to understand what's being asked of him on the offensive line and just getting to adjust to what the coaches have. So he and the freshman and Jalen McClendon, the transfer quarterback from North Carolina State, are all going through that adjustment process of what do the coaches expect from. You can verbalize it in January, February, March, whatever the case may be. But until you actually get on the field and look at, and kind of fulfill what they're looking for here, that's really when you're going to know. So that's where he is right now.
One of the comments that Rule made when I asked about Giancarlo, and he said he's tough, he works hard. And then I forget the exact word he said, but something like a lot of hard he's had a lot of hard coaching. And I kind of noticed he didn't say he's had a lot of good coaching. So the impression I got is the guy's got a lot of heart, that he puts forth a lot of effort, but I have a feeling Rule wasn't that impressed with his technique, and I think possibly, and I've seen this happen on some lower levels, that they just kind of teach people to animal and not teach them technique.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, look, it's with the JUCOs, it kind of depends on – with JUCOs, you can see where the raw talent is. But what does every coach say when they take a JUCO player? Oh, I can fix him. I can mold him. I can do whatever I want. Okay, that's fine. If you believe that, and you want to take him and have him be a part of your program, no problem. But if you do that, then you got to make sure that he's buying into what you're talking about, trying to improve the technique. So if Matt's saying about Giancarlo that he's got a long ways to go, that's probably true, because whatever he was taught up in New York at ASA versus what they're trying to expect from him, if they really think he can be an immediate contributor, I don't think he's going to be starting. But I think their hope is that they can get him into the two deep somewhere along the way this season, because that's why he's here. That's kind of a work in progress thing. So that's going to be, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Giancarlo. There's a lot of pressure on Sean Bell, the offensive line coach, to try and get him as ready as quickly as he can. He's going to be force fed some stuff, and he's just going to have to learn to deal with it and get through it.
We had talked a little bit earlier about things that we had just kind of talked with each other about. things that have to happen for Baylor to have the kind of season that we believe they can have.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought you really hit it that if Charlie Brewer is not the quarterback, this team's got problems.
Yeah. The one thing about this program it always comes down to quarterback play for everybody. And it's kind of like I was telling you this off air, but I'll say it. For those, a lot of our subscribers know who Whitey Herzog is, the Hall of Fame manager back in the 80s and 90s with the Cardinals and the Kansas City Royals. He made a comment about pitchers. He goes, these guys will get you fired every time, meaning that if you manage them very, very poorly, you're going to be out of a job quickly. Well, that kind of is the same thing with quarterbacks. If you don't manage that position very well, your season is not going to go very, very well either. If you don't have stability in that position, you're going to have some issues to deal with. And if you don't, and if it becomes a yearly issue, you're not going to keep your job for long. And so I think, you know, and really what happened last year, look, Matt Rhule, for me, I know he'll never say it, but I think everyone understood that last year was going to be a mulligan just because of the roster transition, the philosophical transition on how Baylor plays offense and defense, all that stuff. But now everything is a little bit more settled. So in year two, this is where the trajectory needs to take off. And, you know, Charlie should be ahead of everybody on this, should be ahead of the other quarterbacks. When Matt says they're all working hard, they're pushing each other, competing, that's fine. They probably should be doing that because if you don't have competition, it doesn't make you better. That's fine. But the thing is that if Charlie were to just suddenly become totally ineffective, lose his job, or gets hurt, and you're asking a true freshman in Gary Bohannon, or if you're asking a grad transfer quarterback in Jalen McClendon, who's been with your program in 2 months, here are the keys, go get it. It's pretty dicey. It's a very sobering feeling. Now, and then, of course, and here's the other thing to take into consideration. How you build your offense and how you build your approach under Charlie Brewer, is it the same as how you would do it for Gary Bohannon and Jalen McClendon? My answer is probably not. I would think that with as far as Bohannon is concerned, it's going to be extremely vanilla, and everything would have to be more of a very simplistic thing for him to have, you know, with reading coverages and that sort of thing or whatever. And with McClendon, look, I mean, he had an opportunity to win the job at North Carolina State. He's very talented for sure, but it didn't work out for him at NC State. He's here now at Baylor. That's the reason why he's here, is because he couldn't win the starting job out there. And here's the other thing about McClendon. As talented as he is, the thing that you've got to ask yourself is if Brewer gets hurt and misses an extended period of time, something we all have to talk about but don't want to talk about and hope that it never happens. But if that does happen, does McClendon have the skill set to take you a long way? We don't know that yet. I mean, there were some moments in his time at NC State where you kind of got the feeling that, sure, yeah, he could probably do it. But again, it wasn't consistent over time. So, you know, it's something where you just have to see it to know what you're really going to get from McClendon if you do that. And so what you hope happens in these first two games against Abilene Christian and at UTSA, despite the despite the San Antonio media kind of coming down on the Bears, we'll get to that here in a second, but it was kind of funny how they were talking about the pack the Alamo Dome for that game, or defend the dome, I guess is what it's called. But, you know, what you hope for in those two games is that Baylor's jumped out to such a comfortable lead so that both Bohannon and McClendon will get some snaps and just become more comfortable so that if it does happen, they'll be able to handle things if something bad happens to Brewer. Let's, again, hoping that doesn't happen and everyone will just kind of knocking on wood or looking to the skies above, putting hands together, that sort of thing. You know, you just have to wait and see how it all develops.
Not looking at all teams, but just looking at Baylor. When was the last time Baylor went through an entire season with one quarterback staying healthy?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know. I would, I, Was it Robert Griffin during his Heisman Trophy season? Maybe it was Bryce Petty when Bryce was taking Baylor to the 2014 Cotton Bowl, or to the 2014 season in the Cotton Bowl. I don't think he was surrendered any time, but really since about 15 was a mess, 16 was a mess, last year was a mess.
That's the other thing that we're talking about. Like, if Charlie Brewer's not under center, because he's the only quarterback on the Baylor campus right now that has taken a live snap under center in a game. For Charlie to stay upright, the O-line has to develop significantly. And the running game is going to have to get something. And that was something where Rule, I said, he was kind of giving those sighs. And when I asked him about a short yardage back, and he goes, yeah, good question, which I've always believed is like, code for I would murder you if we weren't on camera. But no, he said, good question. He said, no, we really haven't found the answer on that. And, he talked about all the guys he's got, and he included Kobe Bullard in there. But he said, we still haven't found a short yardage back.
Yeah, and see, that's the problem here. Well, that's kind of the problem here with that. I mean, because Matt talked about when he got here about having the fullback, the short yardage guy. I'm going to be inaccurate with these totals, but he wanted it to be like a three-back situation where the first guy had maybe 15 to 20 carries and the second guy had about maybe 8 to 10, and then you'd have that short yardage back. Well, they didn't have that last year with the team. The roster this year is not constructed to have that big back there, or that short yardage back there, because Matt always wanted a guy that's going to be about 6'1", 6'2", about 220, 230 or something like that, who could get you that third and one or fourth and a foot or that fourth and goal at the one or something like that, that sort of thing. And that just has not been available, has been around there. Now, does that mean that McClendon, because I know you asked Glenn Thomas about special packages for him last week, and he kind of danced around it. But at the same time, Is that something McClendon can do? Maybe. But again, you don't want McClendon to be a one-trick pony either. So we'll just kind of have to wait and see. Again, when Baylor faced third and fourth and short situations last year, they were able to come up with something. It's not probably what they wanted to do, and it doesn't look like that's what they're going to able to do this year. But it's all but again, like the culture of a program, everything for about a program, a roster coming together, it's not a snap of your fingers overnight and everything comes together and voila, here we are. It just happens. And look, even the most successful programs in the country are going through roster issues right now. Heck, Alabama still hasn't picked its starting quarterback, and they just won the national championship.
We asked about Henry Black moving to linebacker, and they talked about, that the base defense for the NFL is the 4-2-5 now, and I still kind of have a question of, are they moving, and they're bringing the long snapper Ross in to take some snaps at the linebacker slot. I'm still wondering what they're thinking about the linebacker situation.
I don't know what they're thinking. I don't think anyone knows what they're thinking. I'm sure Mike Sorabo feels good about some things. I mean, Clay Johnson, based on what it sounds like, even though they're not really talking about it per se, may not sound like Clay Johnson has a bit of an issue, even though he kind of sounded like he tweaked a knee last week at practice. May have just been kind of like a little bit of a scare or something. But, having said that, there's questions on the front. There's questions with the starters. There's questions with the depth. And that's just if that position gets hit by injuries, that's a problem too. Look, I think Baylor just has to kind of hope that some of these things kind of hold together in positions of question so that they can handle it.
Okay, now Baylor got a new signee last week, right?
I'm gonna dock your pay. It's a commitment.
A commitment. I'm sorry. It's the whole phrase thing. It's a commitment because he can't sign until signing day.
Gabe Hall, the defensive tackle from Waller. Yeah, good signing for them. Now, see, you made me do it. Looks good for you. Anyway, a big kid, 6'4", 285. They were in a race with TCU with him. He hadn't really – he actually committed a week ago on the 9th, actually the day after we had our last podcast about this. And It was a guy that they were seriously pursuing. It's a big win for them. It continues to put Baylor in a pretty good spot, 15th commitment. They really didn't talk about his role on what they foresee from him, and that's fine. They didn't really talk about whether or not he's going to have one hand on the ground, or if he's going to have both hands on the ground, if he's going to be a true DT, or do they think he can be a defensive tackle. You know, that kind of stuff will kind of work itself out. But he's a kid that Baylor liked quite a bit. He's only been on campus twice. He came in March for a spring practice, and then he was at the camp in June. Didn't work out in June, but just came up there and watched him. And as things kind of came about, it all worked out for them, and they got him. And right now with 15 spots, and of course with the attrition, you know, you could see with this class as few as three, as many as five. I think it just kind of depends on what the coaching staff wants to do with this. I still think, you know, by the end of fall camp, we're probably going to have a couple of walk-ons awarded scholarships because that's just where we are. But again, those are one-year deals anyway. So once that season's over, everything, they'll just, you know, rotate off, and then your spot is still there. So I think from, you know, and again, we're talking about the major targets where Langston Anderson, the wide receiver from Midlothian Heritage, still remains high on Baylor's list, of course. They feel good about that. They also feel pretty good about where they are with King Darrow, the running back out of Amarillo Tascosa. Trace Ford, the defensive end out of Edmond, Oklahoma, announced last week that he was going to give his commitment on August 31st. I guess he's going to have to do that in the morning because that's the first day of the high school football season, unless his team plays on Thursday. But anyway, you know, if Baylor's in a race, if from what it sounds like to me, or from things that I've read and picked up along the way, that this is probably a race between Baylor and Oklahoma State. And if they win that race, that's huge for them to win that, especially winning the kid out of Oklahoma. So we'll just have to kind of see how this thing. I mean, this class is pretty much done with the exception of the last, I would say, at max five pieces, at minimum maybe three. And then we'll just kind of see how it all unfolds after that.
Now, next week, Baylor is going to go to a kind of semi-game week schedule. And so I'm expecting next week to see people perked up a little bit more because we'll be getting close enough that they can see the chance to hit somebody in a different colored jersey.
Yeah, that'll be good. And again, that's kind of what we talked about. Once, you know, these last 2 weeks, you know, when next week starts, then it gives you a better, then you're a little bit closer. And of course, we want to remind everybody, too, that Meet the Bears is going to be this Saturday over at McLean Stadium from 3 to 5, where the players and a lot of student-athletes from the fall sports, as well as coaches, are all going to be out there signing autographs. And, again, so just make your plans if you can get down there or over there on Saturday afternoon for those 2 hours and meet the players and wish them well for the upcoming season. Make sure you make have every opportunity to do that.
All right. Kevin, you want to close it out for us?
Sure. Just a couple of things to let you know about as far as the as far as basketball is concerned. We should be hearing here within the next couple of weeks about official visits coming up for Scott Durst's program. It's actually pretty well. It's actually a pretty good thing with Baylor having three home games in September, so they can get a lot more guys in. A couple of other things is we reported last week, and it did happen. Center Joe Luol Atuwil signed an overseas deal with Jerusalem over in Israel. He was expected to leave this coming Friday, the 17th. Looking like Manu LeConte is going to be heading over to the G League, and then Nuni Oma. Things are continuing to develop with him, so hopefully he'll have something in his pro future coming up here in the not so distant future. Of course, you'll be out there for the rest of this week for other coaching interviews and things like that. We'll put them on the site. We'll have a Baylor blitz of some kind. I don't know how intense it's going to be, just given the fact where things are kind of settled in, but we'll try and get some notes and things along the way for Friday's Baylor blitz. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.